Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters. Paradigm Shifters, to me, are people that are making a difference in the collective of our species. Maybe even we could put it this way, that they're awakening in us our ability to understand aspects of life that we might have stayed asleep about. And tonight's Paradigm Shifter was our first Paradigm Shifter on this show and is a wonderful dear friend of mine and Bob's, Randy Masters. And Randy is a maestro of the singing universe. That's what you've got on your website, universalsong.net, Randy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Veronica. Thank you.
One of the things
hi to Bob and everybody out there in Radio Land.
Thank you. Bob says hi, too. He's our sound guy. He's making sure you sound good, because that's what it's all about tonight, isn't it?
Yes.
What I really love about your work, Randy, is that you bring frequencies in from everything, from the shape of buildings to the shape of the frequencies that create notes and so on. It's wonderful. So you're going to play some of the desk chimes that you create that are toned to help us, invigorate our body's evolution. And I was talking to you on the phone, and I said, this is the time of the shift, and I know our bodies are resonant chambers, and I'd love it if you'd help us all move the resonances so we can keep up with these crazy changing times.
Yes,
so
indeed. That is one of the key things to focus on, to be, not only keep up, but to be on point with it. Sometimes to lean into it, and other times to lean back and still stay on center, you know.
Well, I know
the
that in your...
to be in the moment, the present tense, really synced up.
Well, I know also in your lifestyle, in your home life, you've done a great deal to bring in resonant influences or conscious resonant influences in the, I'll put it this way, in the stuff that you have, in the things that you create, in the musical instruments you market, in the music that you do, in your trips to Egypt and so on. Your whole life is really about creating conscious resonance, isn't it?
Absolutely. It is. It's a lifestyle. It's a philosophy. It's just an approach to the living in the unified field as a resonant being.
And
so
how
every
did you
room
wake
in
up?
My house is tuned with something. So lots of things, actually.
Even the colors.
So that
even
it
the colors
get too
that you...
noisy for people, you know, so that all the things talk to each other, but without the conversation being too loud.
So how did you start all this?
Well, I think having diverse interests helped bring in and attract and magnetize different fields of study as I would go in waves and be on different chapters of investigations. And then the more I started finding that I could create things and people could make them for me, then the house started getting filled up with different kinds of instruments and so on, and gems and things that are, you know, both shape resonance and sonic resonances. And a few things with color, you know, painting walls certain colors, and also using different kind of lighting in the house everything from crystal salt lamps to special black lights, you know, that help clear up thought fields to dolphin sculptures that of glass that have some rare noble gases in them that give off the electric blue-white light. Fun, just totally fun, like a Santa's Village kind of a feel.
Oh, wow. So know, when did you start
but not
this?
With all the, you know, weather havoc at the North Pole and shifting poles and things like that, you know.
It's really
I believe
crazy.
In paradigm shifting without having to use the clutch. Although I like to drive that way. Sometimes, you know, there isn't really time to do that. You've got to get with the new program, and it's constantly changing, and that's what the challenge is. We haven't even gotten used to anything, and already the next thing is coming in.
I know, it's really amazing. Can you use music for that? Can people shift themselves or create a shift flow with music?
Yes, you can use music for that, and you can use sounds that may be put together in a way that isn't always going to be defined as music for people. Sequences of tones, bells. And that's one of the things I do with my concept of sonic feng shui is I make these wind chimes that hang outside or indoors that are tuned to various kinds of resonances. If they're indoors, people can have a little fan on it that blows on it. Rather than more or less say the garden variety of typical pentatonic wind chimes that you hear, these are tuned to all kinds of things in the universe and sacred geometry and such. So those combination of tones resonate with what I would say universal sonic truths, at least at this point, until something in the paradigm changes, and maybe the notes will need to change to support the next thing we go through. But wherever those notes seem to be holding up over time, the patterns and the ratios between them, when those sound out in a garden or in a courtyard or something or in a healing room, they create sonic coherency for people. And they're usually a lot of fun to interact with.
So what
that's
happens
one of,
then?
That's why I call it sonic feng shui.
Oh, yeah. If it creates sonic coherency, what does that mean? Does it mean the plants grow better and the people feel better and our hair curls better? Or what does it mean?
Well, I would like to think that plants grow better. Birds fly around them and other animals seem to come around when I'm playing these instruments. They're not disturbed by them, and that's a real good sign that the animals find them harmonious. I would love it if it does impact the growth of plants like the Sonic Bloom Project, where they play recordings of bird songs out into a desert, and all of a sudden there's another level of growth of plants that normally isn't there because the bird song is igniting different growth processes in the plants. And that's been a kind of a model for me. Different times in the morning, you know, there'll be a flock of birds or a couple birds of one type, and they'll have their variety of song or songs, and that will stimulate a certain process in the plants. And then those birds get done, and then another bird or birds come along, and they have a different song, and then that stimulates something. So the birds are really singing the plants into coming online in the morning, and I think that is just an outrageous metaphor for what coherent sound can do for biosystems in general, plants, people, animals, everything.
So let's project a little bit. How can we do? I mean, I know you can't change the entire atmosphere, right?
Well, I don't claim to do anything like that. And
no, but I'm just saying, like, oh, if we take
one
this
would
and
have
take...
to ask very carefully if yes. one were going to attempt something like that, whether it should even be done and whether the lights of divine direction give you permission to do that. I mean, there are things that happen with sound that do affect the weather. That is for sure. Chanting in different languages and medicine dances, which involve swirling vortexes, combined with chant, combined with stones and artifacts that are placed with certain charged vehicle energies to them, have demonstrated throughout history to have an impact on weather. So I believe things like that can be done, but I think that all that has to be done working with nature and never dominating or working against nature or power over. You know, I think that's part of the secret to it. But I do think that the right coherent sounds can certainly contribute to coherent weather patterns, and especially if they affect the emotions of the humans, then if humans put out a more coherent emotional signal, that certainly is going to affect the weather. So I'd use the sound to impact the emotional body. Then the emotional body, when it comes online with more coherency, is going to generate thoughts, feelings, influence the scalar field, the electromagnetic field, those kinds of things, from what emotions that it can do, as opposed to when there's fear in the field. Certainly a lot of fear in the field is going to attract potentially worsening weather conditions, even from something that may be moderate, could get spun out of hand by having the emotions get out of hand. So I see that the sounds can remind someone of a much more beautiful, higher state, especially if the sounds are very pleasing, are the type of sounds that align people more with the other bodies, their other energy fields, their higher self. And beauty certainly inspires one to kind of look up in life rather than look down at life.
Well, that's for sure, isn't it? So do you think that we can, I want to go several directions. The more positive direction is we can use specific sounds in order to heal all kinds of problems, can't we? I mean,
yes,
diseases
absolutely.
And so on. And does because, that, is
you
that...
know, certainly if you set a different resonance with the sounds and someone listening to those sounds goes into sympathetic resonance with those sounds, then other processes in their body can line up or line up differently or perhaps resolve conflicts in that person's energy field, that the sound is stimulating a new type of alignment and maybe also stimulating a higher resonance so that they're vibrating higher than the challenges that seem to be around in their environment. Everything from dust, traffic noise, pollutions, other kinds of noise levels.
And fear.
Noise levels that can get to somebody, but if they can raise their frequency above that, chances are they're vibrating in their own created reality, and they can observe the challenges but not feel like they're walking in the swamp, so to speak.
That's really interesting. Ken, let me see. You do healing work, don't you? You do healing work with tuning forks?
Yeah, and primarily what I'm doing is training healers so they can take tuning forks into their different modalities. And one of the things that I have developed is a way of tuning the body to the Tree of Life, the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, using sacred numbers based on the Kabbalistic numbers for the different sephira on the Tree of Life. And then by playing those in the field, they could be around a person, a ways away from them, in the room. The tuning forks can touch the body, but certainly just by hearing them and having someone put their attention on directing the sound to flow different ways, then they connect with the qualities of the sephira, various qualities like beauty and truth and courage and things like that, that the different sephira are about. And the idea then is sort of to light up the tree in a person's energy field, like their light body. So in lighting up the light body, then the next step is for their physical body to make connection with this higher vibrating field so that different processes in their life will deepen, like if they're working on trust or courage. You know, we want to light that pathway up so that they can embrace an expanding journey with the concept of trust or the concept of courage or peace or anything like that. So quality transmission through the interface of sounds that are tuned to specific numbers that are like a way of phoning home. And the home, of course, would be the source or the well where these qualities stem from. And the sounds dial into that particular well. And then the person's biofield, energy field, aura, chakras, things of that type connect with these sounds. So some of this, you know, of course, the person can hear the sounds. They can also sing along with these sounds. And they can also sing silently with the sounds and just place their attention on directing. Like I can play a tuning fork or something through a microphone in a room and have everybody visualize like that that sound connecting with their feet. Hmm. And yet the sound is all over in the room. But by connecting the visuals with the intent, with some directions, it's amazing what sound can do. So there's a whole little matrix there that I'm describing that's more than, let's say, placing a tuning fork on an acupressure point or acupuncture point or something like that.
How do you
that also is part of the work is to get acupuncturists and chiropractors into working with tuning forks and using the sounds to help loosen up blockages and to help the energy move along designated pathways to clear the traffic congestion, you might say. Does that make sense?
It sure does. And my question here is that I was wondering how you choose which tuning fork for which person, because I know that we all have our own frequencies. I mean, outside of when you do it in a more universal way.
Well, I have different sets that have a certain coherency within that set.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the forks, if I'm using a given set of tuning forks, all those different tuning forks will talk to each other and have a harmonic coherency about it. So that's something that's important. Then also, I use my intuition a lot. Even though I have a lot of science information and such, I use my intuition like dowsing, but I listen deeply and then I get impulses of which forks to use.
Oh,
I also can get feedback by asking somebody, what do you sense when you hear this note? Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes if a blockage moves or is stirred up, that might not be comfortable. And then it can become comfortable after the blockage moves. That's one type of thing. So the response might not be, oh, that's a beautiful sound. They might not actually like the sound. And then, the sound that they don't like could actually help them. Then the other side of it, 180 degrees, is a note that's so beautiful to them that it inspires something. Just like you said one of the times when you interviewed me that a couple people cried when they heard some of the tones that I played.
Yes, that was wonderful.
You know, what was that? You know, that touched their spirit or touched their soul or touched their emotional constitution in some kind of a way. I believe that's part of the healing is for the sound to touch them. But that doesn't mean physical touch. That means touching their aura, touching their emotions, touching them as a new mental idea that they'd never thought of before.
Mm-hmm.
See, those are all different forms of the sensory world that sound can be a transport for. In other words, you can kind of ride on what I say, riding on the sound current and meditating on that sound current.
Hmm. And have you composed music based on all of this?
I've been playing with these areas in composition. I've woven certain knowledge into my irregular acoustic and electric tonal music, romantic music, rhythmic music, world musics. But I have not been producing recordings where those compositions are done and where 100% of all the notes used are in these special tunings. This is an area that I'm pointing toward, but it has a lot of challenges in working with that. Some of the tunings I want, I can't use guitar unless I have a custom fretboard made for the guitar where the guitar frets are placed differently so that they can play the same intervals that I could tune a keyboard to. And that's a challenge. So if I have a composition that I want the guitar to be on, you know, then that's a little more challenging. A fretless bass or an acoustic bass or cellos and things like that, you know, the players can learn to hear the new intervals, especially if there's something that they can play along with. And it's a lot less challenging. But when you have to make instruments or have special instruments designed, we're talking a lot of expenses and such. Harry Partch did a great job of writing all this incredible microtonal music. He was a 20th century composer.
Mm-hmm.
And he built his own instruments, marimbas and xylophones and all kinds of different instruments that were all specifically tuned, every single note on them to different musical ratios, and then he'd compose music and then provide all the instruments in the orchestra for his players in his orchestra. That's a neat thing. It's kind of like a gamelan.
Mm-hmm.
Every gamelan is tuned differently, and every single instrument in a particular gamelan is tuned to go with that gamelan.
Hmm.
So you don't take a particular gong from one gamelan and go across town in Indonesia and play that gong with somebody else's gamelan because it's not tuned to their gamelan.
Hmm.
So then, of course, it makes things a lot more restrictive and not as universal in usage. And I'm looking at different tuning systems that can still allow for enough universality, but we are going to need some different guitar fretboard designs, and certainly Mark Rankin makes just intonation fretboards, so that eventually will allow guitarists to do a lot more like the things that a keyboardist can do, where a keyboard can easily tune, if you have the right keyboard, every single note. So these are some of the challenges that I'm facing, and they're resolvable in different ways, and I'm looking forward to working with top players and helping to move them in these directions, because I think we will get some outstanding music because the performers would be top-notch, the instruments would be top-notch, the music and the tunings would all be very, very dialed in. Not all the composers and performers that I meet are open to working like this. Many of them, you know, are very much challenged because they didn't study this. So, you know, I see this as a future of where music that has sound healing consciousness in it, besides the general vibe or the emotion or the rhythmic pattern, but the sound healing consciousness in the tunings and what specific frequencies are we actually playing? What ratios are we playing? Like the distances between notes as ratios, and what exact frequencies per second, beats per second, are we dealing with that can ignite something in a person's field? And I'm
Randy, we keep hearing that there's a speed up. The frequencies are moving faster, not only on our planet but out in the solar system and even in the universe.
Yeah.
Is this a part? Does that mean there's a rising consciousness about using frequencies in this style in our music, or is it like penetrating our minds so that we're more awake to it?
I believe that the speed up allows people to connect dots where before the space between those dots was not always connected unless the person had the right consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one of the things that's happening all over the world now in the speed up is that dots are closer together, and people can see dots that before they didn't even know were there.
Hmm.
And that's definitely an important factor. I'm glad that you said that. I think that's really a key. There's also this sense of an increasing tension going on, I feel, in the world. And sometimes we have to extremely relax to deal with it, which is like a sports analogy, that if you want to perform a sports activity better, the only way to break certain limits there is by relaxing, not creating more tension in your body, or you'll freeze up and not be able to run as fast or throw a ball as far or jump as high. It's that type of thing. And so as this speed up is occurring, the brainwave on the planet is speeding up, and everything is affected. The rocks, the people, animals, everything is affected. It's like we wake up the next day and the frequency can be different, and everybody is now in a new frequency world.
Hmm.
And we haven't necessarily adjusted to that. We try to do something like we did yesterday, and it doesn't work like it did yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It might not work at all, and we have to get with the new program. So what I'm continually looking for are what notes help us get with the program.
And I like that.
How do we know? Well, that's the challenging part, is how do we really prove what these things do without certain measuring equipment and observations of behavior. You know, it's a bit tricky. So there's a lot of intuition, a lot of observation, trust, feedback. In other words, we all have to work this together to say, let's discover what works and give really good feedback along the way so we can put correction in the things we're doing, and then hopefully dial it in so well that it works for a time, until the next speed up, and all of a sudden something else may have to change.
Well, do your desk chimes help people move the I don't know if this is a naive question, but move the frequencies in and around the house that will make it easier for people to let go of the old expectation and rise into the new?
Well, that definitely is a possibility, and it does happen for people that I've talked to that haven't been using it, especially because the tuning systems in my chimes are very unusual. They're not what they're used to hearing. So it's not an older reference point that they're hearing. I do have historical chimes tuned to Persian and ancient Greek scales and Egyptian, Chinese, things like that. But a lot of them that I have are tuned to such wild things that you can't put them into the same musical context. And that is a paradigm-shifting attempt that I could say, honestly, I'm attempting, you know?
Mm-hmm. Where do you get that material? I mean, how do you know what to change them to? You see what I mean?
Well, I'm listening all the time, investigating things, and it just lights up for me. It says, do this, do this. I get suggestions and impulses. Mm. Or I become so fascinated in something, I feel like I have to make a chime so that I can play with it when I want, acoustically, without any electricity, you know, totally natural. And I like that. Not that you can't do it electronically, but certainly the acoustic play with these is very, very interesting.
Hmm.
The first one I ever made, I don't know if we ever played it on the show. Did I play the one tuned to the rainbow on the show before?
I don't think you did. Can you do that?
Yeah. Here, I'll play it. There's 9 notes here, and I'll explain it in a minute.
Okay. Everybody at home, listen to your effect.
Could you hear that?
I sure could. It made
okay, now
my
what's
body...
interesting? I mean, this is the one that I basically started my whole desktop chime idea with. And so these are solid aluminum, special alloy aluminum dowels that are solid, and they're cut to the different lengths and strung in a kind of a figure that looks like an oriental figure, like the symbol pi. Now, when white light, like sunlight, comes through a quartz prism, it makes these very, very specific 9 color bands that are really, that can be measured right down to the fraction of a nanometer. And there's a dark red and then a lighter red, and there's a light green and a dark green. That's why there's 9 instead of 7, for instance. Now, I'm going to play a few notes out of this selection of 9, and you can hear a very coherent major scale in this, and I'll explain this in a moment. Could you hear that?
Yes.
So I started with do, and I went up to the fifth. I mean up to the sixth, and then I went back to the major seventh. I went up to the fifth, and then I went down to the octave, and then to the major seventh, and then back to the starting do again. It had all but one note of a very good sounding major scale in it. The sixth note of the major scale was not in there. You know, it's not saying it's not in the rainbow, but it's not in the specific colors band that jumps out like these do. So all I had to do is take 2 of the notes out that were like a little bit dissonant, and the rest of the notes that I just played makes a very natural sounding major scale to most people's ear. So I didn't fudge that. That's what nature did, passing sunlight through a geometrically cut quartz crystal.
Wow.
And then converting it into sound. And there's, one could say, sort of with quotes around it, like the light origin of the major scale coming out of light. Do you follow me?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I just demonstrated.
Mm-hmm. It
I may
really
be stretching it a little bit, you know, because naturally if you have a reed by a creek and the wind blows across the reed, the overtones racing up and down in the reed can produce all kinds of different scales. But this scale came by converting light into sound, and it made this beautiful, coherent, simple major scale.
It's very beautiful. I'm going to do a station identification, then we're going to do some more.
Okay.
You're listening to Paradigm Shifters. My name is Veronica Entwistle, and tonight's guest is Randy Masters, who's quite a musician, and in his own right, he also is teaching us a lot about sound, healing, and the shifting vibrations of our planet during this time of the shift. And we haven't yet gotten to him about the Egyptian pyramids and the kind of frequency movements that go on there. Randy has his own mystery school in California. So that was wonderful, Randy. I found that both of those examples that you did of what are they called, desk chimes?
Desktop chimes, yes.
Yeah, it really ran through my body in interesting ways. The first one created quite a bit of stress in one part of my head.
Probably the higher tones. So if I take the screws off the top plate here and I can lift it up to where all of these chimes are all suspended, I can move them around in a room and they clear frequencies in the room. And also you can move them around in a person's aura and it helps clear out the debris from, you know, different things that have gotten into somebody's energy field. So that's one of the ways that healing can be done, just moving them in and about a person's energy field.
So it clears the congestion because it sort of gives it a way to flow, I suppose, eh?
Yeah, it can influence the flow, and certainly the different ratios and intervals in it spark. They have different meanings, you know. There's intervals that make you sound or feel a little mysterious, and there's intervals that sound very, very strong and coherent. You know, all the different musical intervals have different esoteric meanings and exoteric meanings. And many composers have been aware of that and, of course, have written that into their compositions. Some do it intuitively. Others do it with a very deliberate, conscious choice of why they play the order of intervals that they play in a piece to achieve a desired effect.
Because they're conscious of the emotional impact and intellectual?
Pardon me?
Because they're conscious of the emotional, intellectual impact that they...
Yeah, the relationship of it. They're aware that playing a certain sequence of intervals can generally inspire somebody to either want to resolve those intervals or they want those intervals to move to more dissonance and certain dissonances that they want the listeners craving that they will resolve.
Mm-hmm.
And then the composer may deceive the listener and resolve it someplace they didn't expect to go. And so you often are doing a dance between what you set up, expectations that you set up for the listener. Then the listener thinks, oh, great, I know what you're going to play next. And all of a sudden, you don't play that note. And then that creates an intrigue. Whereas if you can guess everything, it can kind of get to be ho-hum, like Wonder Bread or certain kinds of white key music, you might say, on a piano.
Mm-hmm.
How that's not to put down what one can do with white keys if they're tuned properly, but a lot of times it's like a cat walking up and down on the white keys of a piano. It's just a certain kind of a random, chaotic kind of a situation going on there, you might say.
Yeah. Well, so one of the things we were talking about tonight is that we're all moving toward the shift, the frequency is moving up, and your tools have a way of helping assist people to adjust to higher frequencies and embody them. And now I would like you to jump to Egypt where you lead tours.
Well, can I say something with what you just said there?
Sure.
Well, in terms of where we're moving in the galaxy, mm-hmm. I'm tracking certain frequency measurements. You know, I'm interested in the sounds that come out of the sun because I believe that as a stargate, the tonal awareness of the sun is an important key.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I've been using the note tuned to the Milky Way for many years, and I believe that's another way of pointing toward things like the galactic center. The Milky Way is a very big part of consciousness, and it's been encoded in the mysteries throughout all kinds of mystery schools, the big G and the Mayan symbols is, you know, that whole vortex of the Milky Way. So the frequency is 4,303 hertz, which is in between a C and a C sharp, depending on what you're referencing to. In other words, on my piano, this note would be the next note, the 89th note on an 88 key piano. You know, my piano doesn't quite reach this. But then I can divide it down by octaves. And when I do, I get very, very close to the note that Ali Akbar Khan tunes to when he plays concerts. He tunes to 268.8 hertz, which is a D flat. And this note would be 268.9375. Well, 0.9375 is really close to 0.8. So a lot of musicians might not notice the difference in other people, and others could hear it and sense and feel it. So I feel, one of my Indian music friends asked Ali Akbar Khan, and this fellow was a sitar player, he says, well, why do you tune to the note you tune to? And he said, that's the note that I hear. In other words, what I might say is he's hearing the music of the spheres, and he's found a particular note that really keeps occurring for him, and he's identified the exact frequency, and that's what he tunes to. And look how close that note is to a lower octave of the Milky Way. The 268.9375 is a lower octave of that 4,303 hertz Milky Way note. So
wonderful.
A whole musical system tuning around that could be very, very interesting to help us tune to a sonic fundamental that emanates from the Milky Way. This scientist named Ostrander wrote a book about matter and antimatter and claims that that frequency is part of the creation of matter. And that's how I got it through my science investigations. And I found that people really like listening to that note. It's very high. I'll get it here. I'll play it. I'll see if the speakers of my phone can carry it. Just a second.
Please.
Okay, so now I'm going to strike this note, see if it works okay in the telephone.
I don't hear anything. Just a click like a lighter.
Can you hear that?
No.
Wow. Well, there you go. There's another demonstration of sound healing. the technology, the speakers and the technology can't handle the frequency.
That's interesting, isn't it?
See, that's like human
beings.
But a
dog could.
Could anybody hear that?
I said, but a dog could, eh?
Oh, absolutely. And dolphins. So there's a lot of frequencies that dolphins exhibit that, they give off that we don't hear because we're typically not hearing much between above 20 to 30,000 hertz and not much below 20 to 16 hertz. And the whales and the elephants are way down there in the low register. I mean, whales are down into 8, down to 4 hertz, and elephants are down around 4 hertz in the extremely low frequencies. The sacred sites give off a 1.45 hertz. You know, I mean, that's just halfway between 1 and 2, basically, hertz. That's infra, I-N-F-R-A, infrasound, and that is so low that it can be felt by certain creatures. I'm sure the whales and the dolphins easily can deal with 1.45 hertz. But humans, we don't even know necessarily that's going on. And supposedly, according to Alexander Putney's work and others who have measured this, these frequencies that come off the sacred sites all over the world, and they give off these concentric rings and pulsations that spread around the world, all the sacred sites link up and talk to each other through this infrasound, and the key infrasound frequency is 1.45 hertz. So the way I deal with that is I can make two different tuning forks that are 1.45 hertz different, like a 128 hertz, which is a note that a very good C below C that connects with the human being very well, gives off nitric oxide, according to John Bolio's research. It actually helps spark the releases of nitric oxide, which is very healthy.
That's laughing gas, isn't it?
And then I'll make another one that's 128 plus 1.45, so 129.45 will be my second tuning fork. and you play those two together, and you can hear this 1.45 pulse and meditate to it. And it takes the two tuning forks to do that, because nobody would hear 1.45, but you can hear the pulsation as an interference pattern between the two forks. And so that's a very big part of what I've been discovering in sound healing, is working with these difference tones. I'm finding that with chiropractors, they're able to move blockages by using two different tuning forks that are really close together, and it creates this kind of a wobble. And that wobble is moving the blockages differently than the fundamental of the fork that would do. Can you follow that?
I think I did, yes. Yes. But if they're below our ability to hear it?
Oh, you can hear, you can feel the pulse.
Oh, you can. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All these different tones you can hear is a wobble. It'll go wah, 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 wah. You'll hear that wobble like that. Everybody can hear that.
Can we actually broaden our spectrum of being able to hear? Like, can we hear lower and higher if we practice?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's part of the work of Alfred Tomatis, is to break through the sound barriers that people have based on conditioning and traumas. And probably a whole lot of other interferences that he doesn't maybe go into and discuss. There's reasons why people all of a sudden hit a certain realm and they don't go past that sound barrier. So they did studies, and symphony conductors are in a great place up in front of all those acoustic instruments, giving off high overtones up around 2,000, 4,000 hertz and up, that stimulate and charge the whole being. So when you're standing up in front of a symphony conducting, the amount of a sound bath that you get of high frequencies is extraordinary. So the conductor is in a very, very fortunate position, better so than a lot of players in the orchestra who don't get to hear all that sitting in amongst the different sections that they're sitting in. But the conductor gets to deal with that. So what Tomatis did is he developed different kinds of filters so that to help people, and they'll listen to, like on a Walkman, and they'll listen to recordings with certain filters, high notes filtered out or low notes filtered out or certain frequencies boosted. And eventually, when it breaks through a sound barrier, when they hear the sounds with all those overtones, their being and their brain can fill up with light through sound. It light ignited by sound in a way that they weren't able to before because they had these sound barriers in their consciousness. So what Tomatis is helping people do is break through those sound barriers. Then, when they listen to the music, they can be completely energized by different kinds of music that they listen to, because they're getting more out of the high overtones than the average uninitiated listener, or a listener whose frequency barriers have not been broken down, you might say.
So it's really possible then. So do you think that as well?
Now, I don't know how high this can go, but certainly above 30,000.
Wow, this is very exciting.
Yeah, and then when you listen to music that has those high overtones, it's like you're getting vitamins that other people don't get, because your system can now absorb those vitamins. They don't just fly by. Do you follow me in that analogy?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
So it
and
is
that's the potential. That's one of the potentials in sound. And then by working with brainwave frequencies as a result of difference tones, you know, that's expanding our ability to be awake and conscious and yet be in delta or theta and not fall asleep, to be actually awake, functioning, thinking, but be in that state that we normally would only get to in the extreme dream states, or, you know, especially for theta, to be able to be in theta and do healing work and be able to dial your brainwave into very good brainwaves. So the brainwave is a big part of it, and that's what the Earth gives off. And these sacred sites are designed to work with the brainwaves of the Earth. And, you know, how the sacred site interacts with the Earth's brainwaves is a big part of the secret of the sacred sites, as is how
the
sacred sites...
They're built on the neurological centers of the Earth, right?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And also to tune into the frequencies that different star systems pulse at and give off.
Okay.
And so a lot of the sacred sites are tuned to different stars and work with the starlight from different stars, because the starlight has qualities in the light. And so there's a way that interacting with light and sound gets stirred up with the sacred temple that knows how to convert starlight into usable sound, you might say, or usable sound to beam back up out into the universe in such a way that perhaps another star system hears what comes out of like something like the Great Pyramid.
So if people come to a sacred site, for example, and with intention help themselves embody these amazing interactions, they can then transform?
Well, I think that that's possible. And I think sound is used to help them transform. And I believe a lot of the temples were made so that the sound could help them transform. There's a cathedral in Spain that has this ceiling all covered with these intricate sound sculptures that are called pendentives. And Alhambra, I'm trying to think where it is. Anyway, the ceiling is amazing. And the sound will last for a half an hour reverberating when you play the sound there, the way these special acoustic forms are built into the ceiling.
And how long ago were they built?
Beyond what the contemporary ability of architecture generally can achieve. They don't even understand how that's done. And beyond what a lot of acoustic engineers have been able to deal with.
How old is this church?
I think it's the one in Alhambra, but it's in Spain.
How old?
There's another one called Isfahan in Iran that also has these. And it was famous because the musicians would come in and play and then leave, and then the royal couple would come back and enjoy a private concert with no musicians there based on listening to the sounds reverberating through these through the architecture of the building that was all designed around sound. And the ancient formula was sound follows form, not the current version of dysfunctional architecture, which is sound follows function. But sound follows form. No, excuse me. Form follows sound. Form follows sound. So in other words, it was with a knowledge of sound first that they then followed through with the architecture in order to process the sound properly.
And the word was made flesh, right?
Yeah.
So tell me about the pyramids. You've been taking sacred site tours for quite a while.
I co-led two tours there, and then we're scheduled to do one May 1st through May 13th in Egypt. And what I've been hearing from some of the tours that have just been down there, there's been some amazing, amazing things that we don't hear about on the news, beautiful things that were happening. And people just pretty much could do a lot of things because tourism was almost 100% shut down. When John Anthony West was there last month, he had the only tour going on at one time. And so it's very interesting. So when we go to these sacred sites, we're using our voices and tuning forks and crystal bowls and other things and interacting with these different Egyptian or ancient civilization monuments that were made and tuned to sound. And they're just remarkable, the resonances in the rooms and the consciousness effects that happen when one does sound consciously in these different temples, including temples that are partially broken down and under disarray or been destroyed or damaged. You know, we're not going into these rooms in general in their pristine condition, although there are things that have not been corrupted over the centuries. But a lot of them are broken down, and these sound fields are still operating. At Saqqara in Egypt, I was toning in these little booth things that are almost like the size of a telephone booth, and you walk into it from outside and just step into it. And I would sing, and people all over the courtyard could hear me doing toning, and I was barely using any effort whatsoever. I found the acoustic sweet spot and the right note And I would tone that note, and people would hear it all over the place. They didn't even know where the sound was coming from at first. Until they discovered that I was in these little booths.
Were the little booths built with Saqqara, or were they added?
No, they're built with it. Saqqara is one of the temples that has a lot of ancient sound wisdom in it. Profound sound wisdom was built into that temple. For shifting consciousness, I imagine, for helping initiates ascend, for at maybe more extreme cases, even certain beings could achieve light body effects while they still had a physical body and come and go. I believe it processed, the sound processed people through the necessary unresolved traumas so they could literally get over it and get on with it, you know?
Yeah.
Instead of get so bogged down in the processing that, you know, they don't really lighten up. I believe that they knew how to use sound to make changes in the body's chemistry, to change what hormones were released in the endocrine glands by the specific sounds, and they knew exactly which sounds affected which glands. The Temple of Man, you know, that Schwaller de Lubitz studied, I believe, has tremendous knowledge of the human body that has not been resolved or discovered in modern medicine, that they were far, far beyond where we are today in the knowledge of the different parts of the body and the harmonics and the resonance structures and the parts of the brain and how they function. There are still parts of the brain that the modern medicine world is oblivious to, that the ancients, I believe, knew exactly what sounds to play to evoke and promote the body to make these changes. So this is ascension material, and what I'm wanting to do is remember these things, rediscover them, and also be aware enough if the note needs to change, like we were talking about the frequency going up, to recalibrate the tones so that they speak to where we actually are rather than being an historical artifact, you know, that is no longer resonating because the resonant conditions in the universe have changed. And that includes the resonant conditions on the earth.
Well, now, are there a number of people like you who are purveyors of this awareness, this awakening?
Yeah, I believe there's a lot of people all over the world doing their version of the things that I'm talking about. Whether they use their voice or drums or crystal bowls or chanting or sacred alphabets, I mean, sacred languages, whether they're humming, meditating, and I believe a lot of the ancient esoteric traditions have tremendous knowledge about these things that are not brought out into the public to those who are unprepared to deal with what the sounds can evoke in them.
Well, and I'm going to ask you a final question, which might be a tricky question, is do you feel like it's evoking in you awarenesses that you had in ancient times?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it really feels
like that, doesn't it? I'm remembering them back into this time flow from at least two places. What I consider in a linear way of looking at it, rather than a Mobius strip way of looking at time and space for just a moment, as bringing something from the past up into the current present. But I'm also looking at how to step down from the future information that has not been here, that's coming from more time travelers of the future, bringing that into the present tense. I believe there's a lot more of that from the future into the present going on than what's really fully understood.
Well, that makes sense as well. And this is a part of the conversation that we have to end, unfortunately, and I'm going, well, this sounds like it's just the beginning of something that we need to talk about another time.
Definitely.
You better tell
everybody.
We did
a good introduction tonight, I think.
I think we did a wonderful introduction.
And I'm all ready to get into it now. No, I'm just,
an hour is very short, isn't it?
It definitely is.
Especially in the speed-up time. But tell everybody how to get a hold of you and so on, and we'll invite you back soon if you'll come.
I absolutely will. Thank you, thank you. My email is universalsong@yahoo.com, universalsong, S-O-N-G. One of my websites is universalsong.net, and I also have sacredwindchimes.com, sacredwindchimes.com. And I have a telephone number of 831-662-2594.
And I just want to say to everybody,
Santa Cruz area of California.
I just want to say to everybody, I have a couple of pieces of your design jewelry, and I have so many comments on it, and it really is a wonderful, I think they're pieces of empowerment that really do a lot with my own resonance as well.
That's what they're supposed to do, and you know, in a way, they're musical, whether you hear the notes, but if you, when you wear them, if you feel that greater attunement, you know, through cognitive awareness of a higher field, that's what empowers them.
Wow, I love them, and a lot of people comment, but I guess we're going to be hooked off stage if we don't say goodnight. So I thank you so much, Randy, and look forward to our next chat.
Thank you, Veronica and Bob and everybody out there for listening to us. Thank you so much.
All right, good night.
Good night.
So that was Randy Masters of UniversalSong.net. Check out his website, and I mean, we just got a thumbnail of the many, many, what, facets of this amazing work that Randy does. He's very, very astute about sacred geometrics as well, and all of the energy flows that are created using those, and realities created with that as well. So this is Veronica Entwistle saying, I haven't lined up my next week's guest yet, but tune in next Tuesday night at 8 o'clock for another Paradigm Shifter, and I'll talk to you at 7 o'clock on Thursday night on Radiance by Design. It's a call-in show, and we do meditations. We use some sacred geometric meditations, and we talk to you about how you're handling the shift, do some energy movement, answer your questions, and all around have a good time. And at 8 o'clock, we'll be working with Jackie Salvitti and ET Healing and Explorations in Consciousness. Thank you so much for listening and being the community of paradigm shifters that we all are as we seek through these wonderful subjects. Thank you again for listening. Many blessings and good night.